At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Tom Stretchy screams towards Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go
fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, and bees, this is the Eat, Sleep, Elite, Repeat podcast, your weekly AEW review and breakdown. And god damn, does it feel like we don't do this show hardly at all anymore? I feel like we do so much other stuff that, like, I feel like I wasn't even, like, my brain had to correct for that intro because I've been doing the other one so much. But, you know, that's because we've been pumping out the content lately. Make sure you check out the Eat, Sleep, Elite Fantasy podcast or whatever podcast platforms you happen to be, you know, listening to that on. Shout out to Hangman, by the way. I usually have a little riff at the top here. I don't really have one today, but I don't know that it's really going to fit into anywhere on the show. But I do actually want to shout out Hangman. His run turn as a heel has been more than I could have ever asked for. Because he was doing good stuff as a sort of tweener before, but the decision to have him come back, join with the Elite, and go full bad guy was brilliant. Because I think you could find episodes of this podcast where I was saying the Hangman should turn heel, and you were saying, I don't think they ever will. I think he's the ultimate good guy, because at the time he was world champion, so it made sense for you to say that.
He feels like he can forever be their ultimate good guy, yeah.
And he still could potentially get back there, but right now, as intense of a character as he's playing, I think it'll be a while before we get there. But I also didn't think there was a chance we'd ever have a babyface MJF, so that's the real beauty and reality of wrestling, not the Booker T company, but the reality of the business is that you may not think that something's possible, but you never say never, because you just never know. Things change, people change, the world changes, and suddenly things are different. So shout out Hangman for doing a great job lately. You know, really impressed with his work. I didn't think he could ever reach that depth of evil, but he's there. You know what I mean? And hell yeah. But yeah, so let's get into favorites, Charlie. And you got the ball here first. So hit us with that fucking...
We're jumping to AEW Collision episode 57. Where we had Deonna Purrazzo take on Thunder Rosa in a bull rope match, yeah?
Texas bull rope taco, noy.
So they did the, this match has to end with a pinfall or submission and not the old four corner rule. That gimmick is pretty rough at times.
So how does that work? You have to get your opponent into all four corners or something?
Yes.
That was the gimmick of the bull rope match.
Yes.
My God.
Yeah.
Does that mean that was the gimmick of the Russian chain match that John Cena had with Rusev?
Correct.
By the way, speaking of freaking Alexander Rusev, a.k.a. freaking Mir, where the hell is he?
Still in those fucking, that white room.
He's just stuck in the right rooms. Who keeps letting him into those rooms?
And Thunder Rosa came out, hometown pride. She got the Texas flag, the state colored gear. She was the super baby face. And, you know, right away, the tension is still there. This is their fifth match in the series. And bar none, I believe this was the best match. They brought all the violence. I liked Thunder Rosa finally getting the, you know, she went over big clean. And this was a bloody grudge match. And I was telling you a little bit before we started, I'm going to be sad to leave this Arlington place, because Collision's had a vibe. Collision's always had a different vibe to it. But lately, man, when you mix in Hologram and Beast Mortos and the Trios division that we've had, and then these two, I've loved what we've been doing on Collision, and I gotta say, I'm gonna fucking miss it.
I'd say the thing they need to do the most is maintain that vibe with the show's quality itself.
Yeah.
And then that way the energy can then continue. Because I think people sometimes will watch what's going on in these shows that are centralized like this, right? Even when it's super far away, the next show, they tend to continue that energy. I've noticed this about AEW fans. So we'll see.
And that's the hope, is you can keep that rolling. But yeah, they stuck the landing with this being the blow-off match. And this, you know, Thunder Rosa in this specific feud we haven't talked too much about her because it hasn't been the Thunder Rosa. Everyone knows what we're, what, you know. It's just she hasn't been that level. And whether it's matches even in the most recent weeks, like last week against Taya, or the fucking, like, 2-minute match she had against Maya, it's like Thunder's constantly been on the verge of, I don't want to say being back, but literally being back. And she, this match, she was just fired up at all times, and it just felt like she didn't, she was straight cooking every step of the way. And yeah, I think they built up this, this should be shouted out too. The vignettes that they did building up to this match, this felt fucking huge.
I'm telling you, bro, they got to use Dustin for that more, because they've done it a couple of times now, and it feels like
big. Yeah.
And it also feels like she, I've seen the them and her them interact backstage, and I know for a fact that Thunder Rosa and Dustin Rhodes are close in real life, I'm pretty sure. You know, like, so that adds a layer as well. Yeah. And, you know, and also him being able to understand how Deonna Purrazzo is going to be the most vicious that she can possibly be because how hungry she is. You know what I mean? Like, there's little things that were done in that segment that added so much. Like, when I saw that, I got so hyped for this match. I was hyped for it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I wasn't as hyped as I was going to be if I hadn't gotten that segment with Dustin right before. So again, AEW's starting to figure that stuff out. It's actually something I want to shout out. It was, oh, who is the guy that runs production behind the scenes for AEW? It's
Michael Mansur? Something like that?
Mansuri, I think it is. Michael, the Mike guy, that guy, that one, everyone that was just recently on Jericho's podcast, like in the last 6 months. I listened to that episode a while back. I think I might even mention this on the podcast. That's one of the things that he talked about, was wanting to make the show feel more coherent and like a TV show. And that's the kind of thing that people have never heard of either of these wrestlers, but they see that when they're flipping through their TV and they're like, shit, they're about to have this crazy bull rope. Man, I might have to see what that's about. They may not like it, but they at least are going to give it a shot, because probably they recognize, they might even recognize Dustin's voice. You know what I mean? Like, straight up.
And
like,
yeah. And let's be glad we're getting a program like this, not for a title in a women's division that's growing week by week.
We wanted that for so long on the show.
It's a very good sign. And something that I think we're going to remember from this feud is the creativity of a lot of it. You know, remember that there was, even in their first match, that fucking insane Thunder Rosa table spot that I've watched so many gimmick fucking matches in my life. I've never seen that happen. And maybe it's because women are lighter and she was able to do that. That's probably, like, Darby Allin could have done this, I would have to assume, but she just clearly thought of it. And little things like that, and the pile drivers are here, and the chair spots, you know, she was using the chair to fucking dive into the ribs, and it's just like, it all made sense. It was a very creative match, and...
Let me see if I had anything written down that I wanted to add about this.
I'm glad this feud happened. You know, I don't think it reached levels it could have, absolutely. Definitely during the middle of this, like, we were treading water a little bit, but that's okay. And it ended on a high... presumably.
If this is the end, that's, I guess, time's going to tell, because we thought it was the end a couple of different times. They even said it once, I think, right? And then they went back the next day and literally said, oh, well, we said this was the end, but it's not the end. I don't know where you go from it either. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't know where you were going to go after the last two matches. You know what I mean? And yet, here we are.
I'll tell you this, though. I think Thunder Rosa would be a hell of a first challenger for a new champion, Mariah May, if that is the case. Make this feud matter that much more, or maybe against Mercedes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know where either of them go from this. That's kind of the tough part, and probably why they keep just facing each other, because it's really difficult. Right now, there's not as much open sea in the women's division as, like, you know, I think after Wembley, both Will or whoever's holding that championship, whether it be Will or MJF, right? I think Will and Swerve will both kind of have an open sea of contenders to an extent, you know what I mean? Like, whereas, I don't know if the women's division is going to look back that way. After Wembley, we might
it's
have to do like
we've had so many consistent feuds for a while. You know,
yeah, we're reaching an endpoint, so we need to reset.
Yeah, we're gonna get some fresh new faces.
Maybe we need to have too. If Jamie returns at Wembley, that would be the reset that the division could use.
And
you
this
mean?
New heel Hikaru Shida, we're kind of getting glimpses of. So,
bro, would know, it be plenty man? Of I wish it wasn't Mercedes as champion right now, because I would almost feel like if a heel fucking Shida could almost win that championship if it wasn't Mercedes. You know what I mean?
Funny
like
you mentioned that, because we're getting that match tomorrow. Seriously, they announced it today. So, they announced it yesterday, but, well, if you guys listen to this podcast, you'll be listening to it on Wednesday, you know exactly what we mean. But, yeah, Hikaru Shida versus Mercedes is for the championship this Dynamite, so that could be pretty goddamn fun. Anyways, Now that
it's unfortunate that we already have the Wembley match set up. Otherwise, you know what I mean? Otherwise, it would feel like, I mean, shit, there's not a bigger match for Britt at Wembley than Sheeta, though, to be honest, like, other than Mercedes, you know what I mean? Like, those are, like, the two big matches. So maybe they really, but the thing is, if they hadn't spent so long building up the Mercedes thing, I would feel like, if it wasn't such a brilliant story, there's a part of me that would, like, feel like, come on, let Sheeta go to Wembley, you know? But we don't need to do that to get Sheeta to Wembley. Let's be honest. We can have her be there anyway. She deserves it.
100%. So
shorter trip in the plane, probably.
Yeah. Well, what was your favorite this year? Or this year?
This Jesus. Year, my favorite this year, Bryan Danielson versus Will Ospreay. But hey, that's a different conversation. But my favorite for this week. I mean, Collision was a pretty solid show this week, honestly.
It kicked Dynamite's ass.
It did. Dynamite was pretty mid. It was a mid Dynamite this week. It really was.
It was bookended very well, you know.
I really liked Kyle and MJF. I really liked some of the other stuff on that show, the whole show. By the way, I agree with Sheeta in the previous segments, the one I'm about to talk about, calling herself the ace of the division. I agree. I think that's fair to call her the ace. Some people might say that it's somebody else. I don't disagree with her, though. I think she's probably the most consistent in terms of in-ring content out of everybody in the company. Everybody in the women's division. I won't say the company because people will be like, you know, but like, they'll turn into the goddamn fucking, the dude from, the Boss Nass from freaking Star Wars. But that's by the way, what I picture when Star Wars fans, like, start flopping and flipping around, you know, about every little small detail about, like, you know, Ki-Adi Mundi's birthday. That's what I imagine they look like, is, like, Boss Nass when he's, you know, telling you yes. So, my weird fucking Star Wars references from 2000 and whatever the fuck year that came out. 1999, actually. Aside, Christian Cage was the special guest referee for the number one contenders match for the AEW World Trios Championship. That was a mouthful. It was Bang Bang Gang, aka, you know, formerly known as the Bullet Club Gold, which I still would love an answer about why they're not called Bullet Club Gold anymore, like, officially. You know what I mean? Like, if it's like a Japan thing, if they just decided that they liked it better, whatever. I would like to name an explanation, though. So maybe somebody who's, if you happen to be listening to this podcast and you have a question on Tony Khan's upcoming call for All In, ask it. Or sorry, for All Out, for either show, really. Just ask him, because I want to know. And they took on the House of Black. and I actually thought the thing that I noticed off rip, there was this tag at one point where Malakai just backed up toward the ropes and Buddy climbed up on the second rope and just tapped him on the shoulder. And I was like, oh shit, this is going to be some shit, because that's some tag team wrestling 101 shit right there. They didn't even fucking look and they just tagged, boom. Everybody knew exactly where they were supposed to be. You know what I mean? Like, this is about to be good. And it was. They cooked in the best way, Charlie. And having Buddy fucking Matthews back, dude, what a fucking treat that is, dude. I forgot. I mean, I didn't forget. I'm going to be honest. I've always known how much I like Buddy, but like, I don't know, something about, like, because they were just kind of sidelined, I just kind of, like, focused on other things. But, man, I'm so glad to have him back. And I never felt like, you know, it's just like, he does so much good stuff. You know what I mean? Like, he'll have a singles run that's really good, and it'll end up leading into a feud. He'll just have random matches here and there. He'll have great opportunities in tag team matches. Remember that run of matches him and Malakai went on when Brody was hurt last year? Like, that was, you know, or maybe it wasn't last year, whenever that was, when they just had that random run of tag matches that were just some of the best matches on the show for, like, no reason at all, just because, you know, they needed to kill the time, you know? I mean, the House of Black always deliver. And I was just sitting here the whole time, Charlie, kind of just thinking to myself, like, God, who are they going to have win this match? I'd like to see both feuds head to Wembley, you know what I mean? Well, the answer is, more than likely, it's going to be both teams going to Wembley, because Christian Cage, that diabolical bastard, sold them all out. As soon as all the guys were on the ground, he started counting quickly. Austin quickly got to his feet, and he speared his ass and counted the 10. Double count out. No contender for Wembley. What a brilliant segment. I mean, everything down to just, like, Christian, like, hiding in the corner at the beginning, not wanting to even remotely get involved, just letting them do their thing. Tags happening frequently. This was just, you know what this match had to it that I would think would be the word that would describe it best? Flow. It flowed nicely. It felt like everything synced together like it was the pieces of a puzzle being wiped. Well, you know, like that, like, satisfying feeling you get when you, like, have a couple pieces of a puzzle left and you're putting the last ones in. It was like that watching this match come together. Like, and yeah, I mean, beyond that, Charlie, did you have anything you wanted to add? I really enjoyed this. I think if you looked at how many times Buddy Matthews, Malakai Black, Brody King, or the House of Black have been my favorites this year, it's probably, there's going to be a serious argument for Buddy Matthews Wrestler of the Year this year. No cap. Like,
yeah, Nigel was on his A game here, of course. And with, Nigel is the best color commentator in the business, and he proves it week in and week out, and he makes matches feel beyond important, and he sold every bit of this. It's like you said, this was an athletic fest. There was never an ounce where you're not entertained. It went the distance. I mean, this was nearly 20 minutes, right? I know it was over 15. And I think with commercials and whatnot and entrances, it was probably near 20. And it's just like, it was so fun. And the trios division.
Fact that we don't DQ everybody every 3 seconds to get out of having to have a definitive winner in matches, bro, makes this feel so fucking important. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that he did this was a fucking an evil deed. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
and let's be real. Even though this was a gimmick ref, it's nice that in AEW, which is one of the main things that made me so happy when we first when this company first started, is the refs can be a little lenient. And yeah, we have Christian Cage as the ref here. And, you know, the way it ended is perfect for Christian Cage. And now we're going to get this 9-man match, potentially 12. God, imagine if we get Death Triangle in on this match, and maybe that's, you know, maybe that's not gone, right? But yeah, it's so much fun. Just yet again, look at the guns. God, I mean, how when Austin Gunn's doing his little thing, man, like it sticks out. And Colton,
I actually want to shout him out. He's improved so much ever since they put those titles on them forever ago. Like, he took that, and then the fact that they won the trios, like, seriously, and like has been trying to improve. Not that he was bad, they're both good, him and his brother both, but we always said forever that we liked Colton as a wrestler more. He just looked smoother, everything just looked like it had more impact.
He was so far above him in terms of selling too.
Yeah, that was the big thing. And I think Austin has caught up, and maybe even he might have even passed him now, which I don't know if that's true, but we'll see. Time will tell.
This is their second match, these two trios, and I just like our other favorite, I believe this one succeeded the first, so 100%. That's a good sign going forward, and another collision main event as one of our favorites. So
I'd like to tally up at the end of the year which show got more. I'm going to guess it's Collision.
Oh, big time. So it's actually our first Collision main event in a while. But yeah,
Collision's been kind of in the shits in terms of main events for a while.
Since or June I guess 11th in terms was of our favorites. Last favorite, which was Kyle versus Orange Cassidy. Yeah, Collision main event.
That makes sense. That's a good match. So,
you know, funny enough, I saw this tweet. I think it was 2 days ago.
Yeah.
It just goes back to our discussion on one of those pay-per-views with the Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong match.
Uh-huh.
When they said, this might be the best match in AEW history.
Oh my God. That's actually awesome.
All the comments were like, agree with
them. Dude, I so fucking wish that we had the fucking streaming service. So we have to have fucking just fucking missed that match.
I just always remember, I was like, you and I, we didn't talk about it before, but we just were like, God, this match didn't work for us.
I just sat there the whole time and I was like, this is the match. These two fucking legends of fucking NXT Black and Gold era.
Guys,
like,
that we love.
Maybe the two best in-ring wrestlers of the NXT Black and Gold era, probably. You know, like, and they're just like shit in the bed right now. Maybe we just missed something.
Hey,
I am
so glad that people love that match, though, because fuck yeah. Anyways, let's get into a little bit of news this week. First, we'll follow up on our poll from last week where we asked, would you want Shane McMahon in AEW? It was an overwhelming no.
It seems like there's been radio silence on that, too. So I think any ideas of that possibly happening are probably dead, hopefully. Thank God.
A brand new TNT television show called TNT Overdrive is featuring AEW stars. And the first one was Will Ospreay versus Bear.
The fuck?
It brings adrenaline junkies a collection of the most thrilling moments and exclusive stories from AEW wrestlers Saturdays 10-9.
He stole Bryan Danielson's gimmick.
Yep. So there you go. More AEW content for Warner Bros. Who just lost.
Whoever approved Will Ospreay wrestling a bear, I fucking love them.
Kota Ibushi set for DDT in-ring return. So it sounds like he's back after that January injury, and good for him. We'll keep an eye on that. He's
hoping that shit works out better for that guy. The time that we like last saw him, it was a rough time in that guy's life.
Yeah,
and you could tell in his in-ring performances.
Then he both of his ankles in that last match with that Noah show January 1st.
Oh yeah, bud. Fucking, we watched that match too, didn't we? Like, I know we watched the one right before that, but yeah.
The idea that Meltzer put out, he said basically when Kenny Omega returns, Ibushi is returning. He's under contract there, and he's waiting for Omega to return for him to return. I don't know if there's even a date when Omega will return. Put it this way. I don't think it's so far away as before when I would talk about it and go like, I don't even want to think about it. It's a long ways away. He's getting better. I know that. Thank you, Dave.
I mean, I imagine Kenny said something to the effect of if he had decided to get the surgery, it would probably be like 6 months or something like that, right? Yeah. Where he'd have to sit with the bag. So if he did that roughly around the time when he was, and he looked pretty fucking rough when he came out to say that. So he probably had just had the surgery done, if we're being honest. Like,
maybe
I don't know that.
Shows up at Winter is Coming or something, right?
Yeah, I think ideally it's going to be way after Wembley because we just don't know. And hey, maybe that's why they're saying stuff like this. Maybe they're teasing it up so that it does happen sooner rather than later. But the truth is, we'd rather Kenny gets the care that he needs and is capable of even doing probably 10% of what he was before. Because I think the difference between this time and last time is last time he came back from an injury that you could probably not do what he did and go fully, you know, balls to the wall again. Obviously, that did not work out for him. Obviously, this is not necessarily directly tied to that. I can't say that, but I, you know, it's probably safe to say that, you know, his style doesn't help when you have issues like that. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. That being said, though, I do worry, will he be able to be the Kenny when he comes back? Because, I mean, I don't know if he's going to hurt himself and potentially, you know, maybe even die. I mean, I don't want him to do that. You know what I mean? Like, I'd rather him be safe. And that's kind of what I always say about Will, even though Will is a madman and refuses to slow down for anybody, you know, like I worry about them both because I want them to be able to walk when they're older, you know, but I also respect their decision as performers to go balls to the wall. You don't ever hear me saying that about Darby Allin because I look at Darby Allin and I look at what he does and I'm like, yeah, I mean, I could never explain to that guy why he's an idiot, you know, like, but, you know, it's still awesome to watch. And if he's going to destroy his body for my entertainment, well, goddamn, I'll be entertained, you know, like. Just like the gladiator arenas back in the day, you know? I mean, I've actually heard a lot of comparisons made between pro wrestling and the gladiatorial arena. More than you would think. They didn't die in it nearly as much as people would be led to believe. So they kind of were like pro wrestlers to an extent. They just fought with actual swords, you know?
PW has filed the trademark for Meat Mayhem.
Fuck. No, Tony.
Tony Khan mentioned before.
Tony, no.
One of the first ever Meat Madness match, but it was postponed.
No. So. Stop it now. It was funny at the time. Fuck off.
Nah, he's getting it. Ray Phoenix withdraws.
Hey, you know what that means? If we have Meat Mayhem, there's only one man that could possibly be in that match, Charlie. And you know what it is. It's fucking Wardlow.
Ward, this is... I ironically
caught you off guard with that one.
I do miss him.
I do actually miss Wardlow. I think he'd be fun to have on TV just beating people up right now.
Ray Phoenix withdrew from an indie event on September 27th due to personal circumstances. Penta El Cerimiero said, no more gossip. My present is in A. So, do with that what you will. We're still unsure what exactly is happening with all that. So, that being said, the only other news I have is the preview for Dynamite next week. We'll get to at the end of the show. That being said, Duke, I think it's time for some Ring of Con to talk about before we jump into Dynamite, Rampage, and Collision. I'd like to keep everyone a little updated on Ring of Honor.
Ring of Con?
Yeah, take it away.
Yeah, so we had the Dark Order opening up the show, taking on Sammy Guevara and Dustin Rhodes. And they got some solid time here, and they did some solid stuff here. Dark Order at this point are glorified jobbers. I'm just going to be honest. I'm saying it as it is. The truth is, I'm willing to see this tag team out because Dustin's been doing good work recently with the Von Erichs. And if they're not going to be used regularly, because it seems like they haven't been on since they won much, you know what I mean? Then maybe this gives him something to do in the meantime. And it's a good way to kind of put Sammy back on that babyface track that I mentioned like a couple weeks ago, or a week ago, whenever it was he came back. I can't keep what week and day it is straight anymore. We had a recap of Athena being dominant, and she had some harsh words for Billy Starks, who lost her championship. She demoted her to a minion in training once again, Charlie. The betrayal.
I'm down.
We had Red and Queen get involved, and they challenged him to a match later on in the show, which could go on to be one of the fucking best matches of the week. Not even kidding. Like, you know, at least in my opinion. Taya Valkyrie took on Hyon. I believe I pronounced that correct.
Yeah.
Hyon,
maybe.
This is a person who was known, and I actually saw, like, I accidentally looked at spoilers, but I didn't really look at them. I just happened to click on their own Ring of Honor results. Now, if you look up Ring of Honor results, it's going to give you this week's results, not last week's tape results.
Like, oh, you mean the latest taping?
Yeah, that's why it thinks that. I don't know. Because a lot of people don't actually watch Ring of Honor and they just look at the tapings. You know what I mean? So which is, I mean, fair enough for you guys to do that. But I actually try, I'm doing it for the review. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just trying to, you know, look at, sometimes I miss a detail. You know what I mean? I don't feel like going back to the whole Ring of Honor show just to find it, you know? But anyway, so she hit her with Shania Payne. But yeah, she was a known thing. I think she's a person. Like, they even made a note out of it in the show, and then she just lost really quickly. So, but whatever. Sometimes you got to give Taya legit wins, I guess. One half of the Baby Boys, which I believe was Griff. Yeah.
Griff,
I don't know why I didn't write down that it was Griff.
Melissa,
anyway.
I love seeing Melissa do these interviews.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, anyway, he's challenged to one more match for Serpentico's mask by Serpentico and Angelico. And Maria, at the beginning of the segment, is like, yo, where the fuck has Cole Carter been? It's like, good question, Maria. Which
he's injured. Yep, we covered that.
Yeah, okay. So they're just riding him off TV, essentially. Okay. He's like, I don't know, man. But yeah, so the Infantry took on the Kingdom for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships, Charlie. They did let them cook here. I think I'm just, and this is sad, and I was writing this in my notes because I was hoping they would prove me wrong, but they did not. I think I'm just hard on believing at this point that we're going to do anything with the Infantry, you know?
Yeah.
And we got some Dick Punch Taco Night in there. You know, he punched him in the wiener. I don't even remember if he hit him with a pile driver or not, probably.
He's unfortunately, Bennett, he's a boring heel. And he made so much more fun to cheer for when he was doing the goofy shit.
Yeah.
And he just comes across as this boring.
I think he'll have a place as a single guy in Ring of Honor when this Kingdom.
I don't know about singles, but definitely.
I don't think we're going to break the Kingdom off from Roddy and fucking have them be baby faces again.
Yeah. It's going to have to be when Roddy's a baby face, which who knows when.
Oh, Christ. That could be years, literally. You know what I mean? Like, he was literally a heel for years on NXT. You know what I mean? He had multiple factions. Like,
fucking drop these things, man.
Yeah, they really should have taken him off of him here. We got a promo for Wembley Stadium, bruv. Rachel Ellering took on Brooke Havoc. Okay, so this is actually another one of those matches I like to talk about that we have on Ring of Honor every now and then. It's a prove it match, I like to call it. This is two known people that are potentially going to be people on Ring of Honor that you're giving an opportunity against each other. It looked a lot more like a squash, but I actually think they showed what Brooke Havoc could do a little bit here. Reason why I'm making note of her, she is a trainee at the Nightmare Academy, which is Cody's school, for those that you don't know. So anyone that comes out of that academy, I instantly give a little bit of a look at, because, I mean, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. I think Preston was trained there, right? So, like, you know, like...
He's a trainer there.
Oh, Preston is? Okay, I didn't know that. But there's people that work at the Nightmare Academy that are good wrestlers. You know what I mean? Like, people that we know, and QT has been involved with a lot of them, I would think. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, no, this is like, this is the heart and the soul and the blood of AEW has
and
been
sometimes
a lot
we'll
of this
see,
talent.
Look, we're starting to see guys come out of Seth Rollins' school, Nathan Frazier, and he wrestled in AEW under Ben Foster. This guy is a very, very good wrestler, and he's current NXT.
I'd love to see somebody from his school end up here. I feel like that would be cool for him. Like, because I feel like he knows that he's never going to send any of his people there. Like, if they ask him, he's going to tell them to go to WWE. You know what I mean? Like, if they were to ask his advice. But, like, it'd be cool if one of them just decided they didn't want to go to WWE and go be their own person. And they could still, he could still, like, be like, yeah, I helped with that. But look at what he's doing now. Or look at what they're doing now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Cool. And Frazier is very good. So,
but yeah, Rachel, you know, picks up the win here. But like I said, I think we got a solid look at both of them here, and I think this run they're about to send Rachel on, dude, in singles might actually make her career straight up. Like, I think she's about to fucking unleash the Jets, and I forgot how good she was on the mic because she was kind of, you know, her and Layla were both kind of just like tossing it back and forth when they were tagged, you know. She's actually a pretty good promo. I guess that makes sense. I mean, I listened to fucking her father, but literally cut some of the craziest promos I've ever heard in my entire life for a tag team. You know what I mean? Like, so I guess that makes sense. The Ellerings are probably pretty good on the mic, but, you know, like, either way, like, I was just like, oh yeah, this should be some good stuff there. Lee Moriarty and Shane Taylor were backstage, and they called out Top Flight and Action Andretti for a couple different matches. So Action Andretti is going to be getting a shot at the Pure Championship. Okay, shit. All right, cool. I'm down. Let's do it. Action could probably figure that out. I mean, I don't really think of him as a technical guy, but I'm sure he knows what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like, given how much, I mean, you beat Jericho, you probably have a good grasp of wrestling, I'm going to guess. You know what I mean? But that being said, yeah, there wasn't much to this other than just them calling him out, you know, Shane talking his shit, you know? The Outrunners and Erica Lee defeat some people. I don't know who it was. They beat some people. But, Charlie, adding girl, this might have added a new element. I think the Outrunners, they might be good now. We might like the Outrunners now.
I am on board after that collision vignette. It was
That was the greatest. Ever. If there was ever anything for this gimmick to work, that's it right there. You know what I mean? Like,
I cannot believe how good it was.
Oh, it was brilliant, dude. I don't even know how they made the camera look like that.
You know what? If we're not gonna do it with the infantry, give me these guys as the fucking champions. No,
fuck that. Although it would be hilarious to see them be the ones that beat the kingdom. But, yes. Like, fuck that, though. Come on,
slip
like,
on a banana peel and fucking win it.
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah. Darian Bankston took on Robbie Eagles. I've talked about having Robbie in Ring of Honor before. I would love it. Keep bringing him back. You know what I mean? Give him a fucking Ishii-style run in Ring of Honor. Just let him face everyone. And this Darian Bankston guy, it's something going on there, Charlie. I don't know. Like,
Evil's Prince.
Yeah, he's got something going on there, so... But I would like to see Robbie show up a little bit more, because, you know, he could do some good stuff over here. Tony Nese was accompanied by Daivari and Smart Mark Sterling, and was like, fucking give me somebody, man, I'll fight anybody. Fucking Ishii. Shit. Ishii's like the fucking goddamn Grim Reaper of AEW right now, bro. Anyone that thinks they're fucking badass, he's like, oh, you think so? Mm-hmm, okay, great. It's like him and fucking Murder Grandpa, bro. You just summon them. Say
this was a match between the two biggest small guys he's ever seen.
You know what? God damn it. When he's right, he's fucking right. I know, but this was some good stuff here. You know what I mean? Ishii, you know, does some... I really wrote my solid stuff. You really can't complain. Like, it's what Tony Nese is the weirdest wrestler ever, because he never really has bad matches, but he's like always relegated to like the back burner for some reason. And I can't explain it to you. Rachel Ellering was backstage, and that's when I saw that she could talk. Cause I was like, oh yeah, she's got some stuff. And I forgot she'd been gone for a while, Charlie. She got hurt a while ago. And I guess I just hadn't realized she'd been gone. You know what I mean? Like, cause they just filled the time. So shout out to them for making me not even realize, you know what I mean? But they gave her time to heal, you know what I mean? But Harley Cameron made an interruption here, and Harley Cameron's been kind of like footing, but I'll just use the term pussy footing around fucking Ring of Honor for a while now. Like, should they really want her in Ring of Honor, but for some reason they just won't pull the trigger and just have her show up there every week, you know? Like, but I'm down. Harley Cameron fits the vibe of Ring of Honor, you know what I mean? Like, but even if it's just like a one-off, that should be a good match. Okay. So we had Johnny TV versus Fuego del Sol here. Pulse check for Fuego. And the pulse check is, Charlie, he's back to being Fuego del Job.
Yeah.
That's a brutal fucking pulse check for Fuego to get Johnny TV. You don't even beat him. A guy who arguably is the guy that everybody beats at least once. That is tough for Fuego. Because I bet they signed him to a not short deal. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably like at least a year, I would think. Maybe not a year, but longer than like a few weeks. You know what I mean? Like, that's tough for Fuego. Not a good look for him. They didn't even give him much in this match, if I'm being honest. He had some stuff. He looked like he might win for a second, but yeah, tough. I mean, here's the thing, though. Do we think they would give this as a feud to Fuego?
Maybe.
Maybe I'm misreading the situation here. Possibly. Well, we will see. But let's talk about something actually good, Charlie. Queen Aminata and Red Velvet took on Billy Starks and Athena. And the goddamn dirty, cheating, stinking heels used their underhanded tactics to steal another victory here. Those bastards.
Bastards.
But, you know, they have to. But it was a phenomenal main event, though. I mean, they fired on all cylinders. It was a great match to close the show. I think this was one of those random Ring of Honor matches that, especially when you feature all four of these people in it, it's got to have a really good chance of going off. They might be the four best wrestlers in Ring of Honor right now. Is that crazy to say?
They're the most consistent.
Do you have anything you wanted to add about this?
It's the most important. Yeah, did you know?
Anything you wanted to add about this? They definitely are building the entire show of Ring of Honor around the Queen Aminata and Red Velvet versus Billy Starks. And I'm glad that they decided to do that. That someone finally realized, someone had a fucking brain and realized Athena is everything. Let's build the show around her. You know, like.
Yeah. And it feels like the right call. I enjoyed the match and
phenomenal effort all women's put in here. God damn it.
All women's.
Yeah. All the women. Well, and that was the end of the show. So take us the fucking Dynamite there, pal, which we haven't talked about at all yet. We got through favorites and fucking Ring of Honor. What the hell is going on here, bud?
Yeah, well, we open up with our American champion hitting the ring. We get the massive American.
He needs to come out to Real American. That would be the ultimate heel move.
Yep. It sounds like he was even doing some Real American riffs. What's it called? At the Rev Pro show. So He's healing it up. I don't think he's going to do that on AEW television.
No, but he could do that on the Indies or something. Show up there with Hulk Hogan
scene. And they're already selling some MJF merch with that. There's so many things that they could sell merch of, and sometimes you just like you're selling a fucking flag with MJF's face. You know, you could be selling.
No, AEW merch opportunities are fucking so ridiculous sometimes because, like, I don't know why they come up with these elaborate. Like, I get it. You think maybe one person will buy the Swerve jacket, right? But, like, no, but not many people are buying a giant fucking wrestling gear jacket. You know what I mean? Like, that's. Yeah. Even if it's made to be more comfortable, like no one's doing that.
Missing out on like the fuck.
And they're also like, it's kind of, and I'll be honest, maybe this will hurt AEW sales. I apologize if it does, but they're kind of highly priced. So if you're going to buy something, you're going to buy something you're going to wear every day. You know what I mean? Like,
could you imagine if they had capitalized when Roderick Strong was doing the neck thing? People would buy neck braces to fucking wear in that crowd. They would pour in money. Luchador masks. We have so many great luchador masks. They could start selling hologram masks tomorrow.
But can you imagine how cool that would be during his entrance? A bunch of glow-in-the-dark masks in the crowd?
That's simple. But, you know, we'll get a fucking American flag with MJF's face on it, which... fucking ridiculous. The biggest irony isn't lost on us, though, that he's taking this title international for the first time since Pac did, so... And he changed it to the American Championship. This is why MJF's the fucking man. Alright? Anyways, he opens up this match against Kyle Fletcher, who we've dubbed in the past as anytime he's in the ring, whether it was Kenny Omega, whether it was Bryan Danielson, and I believe the third was Will Ospreay. We said, well, he did it with the big three. He did it with MJF here as well. This was a really enjoyable match.
Yeah, I think we could start calling it the big four and including Kyle now. I think it's fair.
He could. Yeah. He is surpassing other people. And if Daniel Garcia goes to NXT, well, it's safe to say Kyle is going to jump him. So that being said, Kyle, that's just at least because, well, obviously.
Fine, big Dan's five. Gonna, Kyle can be the
Dan's
fifth.
Going to be gone.
I know that. It would still be four. Fuck it.
And yeah, this was good, man. This was an enjoyable match. Fletcher had a good comeback. The gimmick of MJF doing the kangaroo kick still works for the live crowd. And after the match, MJF, you know, went to beat the living shit out of him. And, well, he did beat the living shit out of him. Ospreay was locked up. Ospreay finally got out. Pretty cool shot of blood all over his white shirt as he's helping out his buddy. Video package for Danielson and Jarrett showed. Very, very good.
Double J.
We get a Mariah May and Viva Van 6.5-minute squash match. This went through a fucking commercial. Viva Van being another example. See, now I can't remember. Did we mention this on the show or was it before? Of AEW bringing people to Ring of Honor, bringing them to television, and that's their kind of test. Either way, we had a whole discussion about this, and Aaliyah James was the latest example on Collision. I can't find the source. I fucking saw it earlier. And Viva Van is another one.
To be honest with you, we don't even really need the source. I can tell you from watching every episode of Ring of Honor of the last 3 years, like that's something they absolutely do. I'm trying to think of somebody that recently they did it with. Queen Aminata would be a perfect example. She was on TV for how long? They just used her on regular TV because she was so good. And then they were like, fuck it, you get a world title shot because that's what you would just earn by making our TV matches look awesome, like for a little bit there, you know? It was like a five-week period where it was like she's getting a match or two every week, and they were all bangers. It was crazy. Like
she won the Mariah May won the match via Storm Zero.
She's just not. I don't know what the problem is. Like, okay, I'll say the birthday gift Tony gimmick, like the Tony giving her a birthday gift, like that was like the photo of them or whatever, but like was actually like said die Mariah die on the back or whatever, and then she attacks her. Like, that was good. But, like, the rest of the whole thing with Mariah.
The post-match stuff has been incredible. It's been some of the best. And the video package is going to be.
But, like, it feels like I didn't really see it at first. And now that you said it, I can't unfucking see it now. She's doing a proto-Tony Storm gimmick with this new fucking glamour gimmick. And I don't know if it's going to work for me. You know, like, I don't know. It's kind of weird. The thing
is, we know she can talk. And we know she's believable because.
Not when she does this, though. She definitely can't when she does this.
Tony Storm was the most believable beatdown I've seen since the fucking. Since the jump, like it was good.
Probably the most believable beatdown beyond that I've ever seen was literally most unexpected slash. Well, I guess it wasn't really unexpected, but like the one that like felt real to me, like watching it, even though it wasn't obviously, was when fucking Ciampa turned on Johnny at the end of that random pay-per-view, and we were all just sitting there. You remember you turned it off, and I was like, turn it back off. That's when we started not turning pay-per-views off until we knew for sure. Because they did that video, right after the match. Crazy motherfuckers. Yeah,
video package with Jack and Darby Allin is shown. Perry's watching clips of Allin pouring gas on him, smashing a bunch of TVs. The Taco Bell he's cutting this fucking heartbreaking promo. And the Taco Bell, do you want a gordita crunch? Where the hell it was. And then it cuts right back in. Oh my god. And the rest of the promos lost.
But, I mean, did you want a gordita crunch, though?
Jack Perry. Okay. All right. If Jack Perry pulls out a fucking taco and whacks it over Darby Allin's head and all in, he understands.
Nah, he's going to hit a new finisher called the gordita crunch.
New sponsor. Darby Allin's walking backstage. He doesn't remember the last time Perry was even on TNT. Doesn't matter. Perry doesn't have to show up on Friday when Allin wrestles on Rampage or even at Collision. What matters most is he's showing up at All In. Katsuyori Shibata defeated Brian Keith. I had high hopes of this match. Brian Keith is completely and entirely in the Jericho Vortex. This match sucked. I have no idea what happened.
I am the learning tree.
I have no idea what happened. Yeah.
I think I was on Jupiter by the time this came on, to be honest with you. I think I'd hit the pen too many times.
You didn't miss much. They interviewed Orange Cassidy, just talking about his match tonight. The conglomeration couldn't travel to a hurricane. A commercial, she cuts back. It's Renee with Hangman. She brings up Paige not getting the outcomes he'd been looking for. He said he's been one man he's wanted to take everything from, leaving him with nothing but the ash of his pride. Justice delayed is justice denied. Believe him, he'll have what he wants.
This is what I was talking about, man, bro. I saw this fucking segment. He's gonna
shoot someone.
No, surely.
He's a fucking cowboy. He's going to shoot someone, go to jail for murder, break out.
He's going
to
break out by killing Nick Wayne. Wayne will be arrested for something that he does, you know what I mean? Like, he'll break into Swerve's house or something like that and try and fucking, like, kill somebody and then fucking get arrested. And he's going to murder Nick Wayne on the way out. Like, okay, that'll be how he gets out.
They were able to get the fake publicity stunt. Like, there's a TMZ article and everything.
And Nick Wayne's been murdered by Hangman Page.
on the night of All Out and fucking jumps Swerve or fucking Danielson. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be insane. I think Danielson would be wild.
There's a Swerve sit down with JR. Not much here.
It was not as good as the Brian sit down, I'll say.
Unfortunately. And pretty much just the same common line of, you know, Danielson's body isn't even going to be able to hold up. And Swerve is the final. He's the final line, you know. Orange Cassidy and FTR defeated Beast Mortos, Roderick Strong, and Roosh. It was announced that a casino gauntlet match will be taking place at All In.
Fuck yeah. Talk about getting people on the tape.
Very, very smart. This is job well done, because you know what? This is your bullshit match of the event. By that, I mean, we don't need an Anarchy in the Arena this year, or what they call it, Stadium Stampede. We don't need that this year. Let your gimmick fun match be this. This is going to have the crowd on their feet. When Ricochet shows up, people are going to be cheering. When Daniel Garcia returns, people are going to be cheering. When Michael Oku shows up, you're going to have people jizzing in their fucking jammies. And it's going to be great. It's going to be fucking great. And then Paul White's going to show up and win the fucking thing.
Well, it's a Paul White.
But yeah, this match is pretty fine. It's funny sometimes when our Collision feuds show up on Dynamite with no explanation, because I just want to imagine. Well, I guess it would be vice versa, but I want to imagine a world where they just have no idea what's happening here. I'm sure there actually is a lot of people. If we just go by the ratings, there definitely is a lot of people that don't watch Collision.
No, certainly, yeah.
So they would be seeing this and be like, what the fuck?
What is going on here?
Is this just an all-star tag? I think my brain's a little tired. Okay. Patriarchy's showing beating up the House of Black. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sets up our match we already talked about. Brilliant shit. Camille wins a 2-on-1. And she's looking like a beat now. Beating the shit out of these bitches.
Got like a cool hologram video package in here at one point too. Like,
you're so right. It was right before it. And it's showing his success recently. So maybe it's a sign he's coming to Dynamite soon. Who knows? What the hell happened here? The crowd didn't react at all to Mercedes Moné. The Britt Baker thing's on
television. I think it's going to sound crazy. And I this is going to sound insane, but I'm going to say it. I think Britt's outshining her, dude. I'm not even kidding. Like,
I wholeheartedly disagree, but it's okay. That's why we're here. Hey. We have differences. But maybe they are. But I think Britt not being in person is severely diminished the impact of this segment. It's when you pan to that fucking TV, no one fucking cares in the arena. Not a single person ever cares. That's like, you know what I mean? Doesn't that feel pretty accurate?
I've never been to a live wrestling show, so I don't know.
You know she's not here, so when you pan up, it's like,
yeah.
I'm still confident in this feud. This week was a forgettable one, and I don't think we're going to be mentioning this week next week. So when next time they're in the ring together, I think it's when you're going to get your meat.
You know, I think maybe here's the thing. It could be that they brought in Camille, and so they like there's less flavor for them on her side for people. Yep. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe
so she's not beating her down.
Jamie Hayter return, but when do they want to do that?
Right. God, that'd be a great match to throw on the pay per view. Camille versus fucking Jamie Hayter. I mean, you still have time, Tony. Yeah.
There's been zero word on Hayter, and we're going on.
It's concerning.
18 months now. I really hope she's all right.
I don't remember it being such a bad injury that she was going to be out for like 2 years at the time. So they must have found other stuff while they were going over the injury. You know what I mean? That's all I can think. Or that it was worse than they initially thought. Or the fact that we've heard nothing, it just always makes you think the worst. You know what I mean?
There's been wide receivers that tore an ACL and never came back. It happens. It very well happens.
It's a career-ending injury. I mean, every time you tear something like that, they literally look at you, whether you're an athlete that's a pro athlete or I should say whether you're like a pro athlete, like we were just saying, like an NFL player or like a sprinter, or like if you're a pro wrestler and they look at you and they say, this is a career-ending injury basically, but you can continue to wrestle on it, but it's a good chance it's going to tear again, you know? Like,
yeah.
And there's nothing we can do really to prevent that, just that you can just try and strengthen it again, but it's never going to be as elastic as it was. And it's kind of a scary thought, but generally an athlete will just go with it. You know what I mean? Because they know their body well enough, but it's just a scary thing.
Before
you
being
know?
Real, it's a relatively new thing that ACL tears can come
be
back.
Be repaired, yeah.
Like a speed bump. These used to be guaranteed career enders.
100%. You used to hear about this in the middle of an NFL season, and it would tank your season, depending on the player. You know what I mean? Like
there was... When John Elway...
It was a minimum 18 months off of fucking football for a long-ass time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
it was people couldn't believe he had a career, how he did when he fucking tore his ACL. And he tore it at a young age. And it was always mentioned. And now, dude, people won't even mention it when you show up the next preseason because they're like, oh, well, he's going to get that fixed. That's just how far fucking modern, you know, medicine's gone and surgery and all that shit. Anyways... Main event match, we have Brian Danielson, Jeff Jarrett in an Anything Goes match with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat at ringside. If you know what this match is, you enjoyed it. And this was just fun. Brawling in the back, commentary having a good time. This is the kind of match.
God, Eddie Kingston had to just be loving this, right? Like,
he did. This match didn't take itself too seriously at all. And it was just a really good time.
A good old fun Memphis brawl. You know what I mean? We didn't get like the Jeff Jarrett didn't go full Memphis with the you know the gimmicks of the like he has the last couple times. He probably was like, okay, I've done the fucking you know what do you call it like condiments gimmick a couple times, and it's a cool reference. You know what I mean? But like not every time, obviously. You know,
like when the Hardys wrestled, Darby Allin and someone else, and you got vibes of this when Christian Cage wrestled Adam Copeland in Toronto this year. I believe that was the last time we got vibes of this. Yes. It's just like, you know what this match is. It was a good time.
It's just a gimmick. It's fun. It's Jeff Jarrett and Brian Danielson having what maybe will be the last chance for them to have a match, depending on how Brian decides to proceed.
Like, there was a moment when Jarrett actually did start tweaking.
And, oh, shit.
I thought he was going to break the fucking leg of Danielson. Like, oh, shit. He started kind of getting an itch. Like, this isn't fun for me, motherfucker. I'm going to... Luckily, you know, in kayfabe, let's say cooler heads prevailed, right?
I think there was a little element of Jeff being Jeff Jarrett. I think they even acknowledged it on commentary that he was a little pissed that he got beat in the tournament, right? You know what I mean? So he's like taking it out on Brian a little bit, but he also does want to help Brian prepare a little bit to an extent. I think it's like a mixed bag. I don't think it's straight up either way, but I do think there's always a little bit of bad guy in Jeff Jarrett. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Swerve's music hits. Nana danced his way to the ring or to the stage. Strickland said he just witnessed three legends before his eyes. Jeff Jarrett, Ricky Steamboat, and now Swerve Strickland. They've defined wrestling on this network. The difference between them and Danielson is they've all been champions here. calls Danielson one of the greatest of all time, which will be an honor to retire him at All In. Let's just call this now, by the way. If Swerve does retire him, fucking awesome. It's a Seattle guy. Well, not, let's not even say Seattle guy. It's another Washington guy retiring Danielson, and I'm sure he wouldn't have it any other way. So let's just be honest there.
And talk about, there's an argument that he sees a lot of himself in Swerve. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This guy coming from the West Coast Indies. You know what I mean? And to kind of making a name for himself, but not really ever getting the love by the main roster that he should have.
Absolutely, and I would imagine the fact that there's another guy in this position from Washington with Danielson, it puts, needless to say, our prediction show is going to be very interesting because this match. My God,
I'm going to be predicting this one with my heart and not my head, buddy. I'm going to tell you.
Yeah. But we could be, there could be 30 different theories tossed at each other. It's just like, yeah. Because.
I'm just going to spoil it for everybody right now. I'm not going to be using theories. I'm not going to be trying to outsmart Tony. I'm going to pick who I want to win, who I believe should win that match. And I'm going to pick it. I already know who I'm picking. I'm not going to change in the next couple weeks. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to tell everybody yet.
What you're missing is there's going to be a Money in the Bank cash-in from Charlotte Flair, bitch.
All right. Fuck.
But Strickland wants a sparring partner, too. Sets up the match on Collision. Yada, yada, yada.
With a Wheeler Unibine.
Where we get an in memoriam graphic for Kevin Sullivan.
Do you think the Wheeler match that he has, do you think he's going to, like, what kind of match do you think that's going to be? This is, I guess, my question. His match with Wheeler.
A heavy offense match for Swerve. I don't think we're going to see Swerve working a lot on defense.
Okay. So probably not like a spectacular Wheeler match.
I don't think it's going to be like
the one we had here.
Okay. They could give Wheeler that much love. Hey, calm down.
We have seen it in the past, and we have multiple Combat Club members at the pay-per-view, so, you know.
Okay. Which, by the way, we might have cursed the company by naming our four pillars, because if two of them leave in the same month,
oh, it's, we're going to have to come up with new pillars if that happens, straight up.
Which is to rechalk the whole thing. We don't mention it like we used to, but we used to mention it all the time. It's Ricky Starks, Daniel Garcia, Dante Martin, and Wheeler Yuta. We tried to come up with four pillars of the future.
Okay, if those two left, we will still mention them as our original pillars, right?
Yes.
Who would be our people to move into that slot? Because I have a couple of suggestions. First, I think Kyle Fletcher has to be.
Yep. Yeah, that's the only one I can actually think right now that's a guarantee. And then I would probably make the case for Willow. I'd say Willow.
I
think that'd be the case I'd make because
she's about the most homegrown you can get in AEW. Mm-hmm. Let's be real. Like, she's been from the ground up in AEW, you know? Like,
but let's hope we only have to replace one.
If it's one, it's Kyle, and it's an easy replacement.
It's guaranteed,
you know what
I mean? Kyle, yes.
And by the way, we're not replacing whoever that would be. We just want to be able to say that all the people on that list are in the company currently. And that doesn't mean that if one of them came back, they would suddenly be a pillar again. No, that's something that you have to, you know, it's about being young and being hungry and being some of the best. You know what I mean? And if you leave the company, we can't really keep you in that list, you know? Like,
it doesn't really work. You can't be the four pillars of the future if you're gone. Anyways, we like playing up on gimmicks like that. It's fun. It's fun for us to do. We open up with Darby Allin taking on the Butcher, and I've heard many people over the last 5 years coin Darby Allin as the best television wrestler. You know, at first I was like, God, there's no way there. I mean, it's like, yeah, it was hard to compare because you couldn't really compare it because you'd look on Raw and be like, yeah, these guys are fucking phoning it in every goddamn night. This is mainly 2019. And I was just like, well, then you got this Darby Allin guy, and it's like, you know, all the other wrestlers, they do wrestle mainly on pay-per-views and in other companies. This motherfucker just went out here and had a fucking good-ass match with the Butcher on a random rampage. Zero fucking build-up. No bullshit. This match wasn't even announced on Dynamite. This was awesome. This is just a good time. This is Darby Allin.
This used to be more common on Rampage, by the way, where you'd throw a random guy like the Butcher or the Blade. And it was more commonly the Blade that they would do this with, which I'm not even sure if he's with the company anymore. But, like, you know, like, I think him and his girlfriend left, right? Or something like that. Either they left or they haven't been heard. Sure. Let me be clear. I don't know what their contract status is. They could both still be with the company. But from the last thing I want to say I heard was that him and Penelope were together, right? Or no, it was him and the Bunny.
I tell you what, I don't.
It was him and the Bunny. The point is, whoever the fuck, you know, Penelope is the one with Kip, right? Yeah. Anyway, yeah. The Bunny, I think, is gone. I think I remember hearing, we did hear that, right? I think she is gone, right? But he might still be there because his tag team partner is, so we never know. But he might have gone with her, so I wouldn't be surprised by that if that's what happened. But the point is, you know, they would often just throw one of the two of them or both of them sometimes on a random rampage, and one of the two matches would be solid because it's just like they're not bad wrestlers. They just don't get used. Nobody really knows who they are or what they do, you know?
Yeah,
like,
they do really good as tags, but...
All we know about the Butcher and the Blade is that they're going to smoke you like weed. That's what they said. There's some stoners, man.
I tell you, I really enjoyed this fucking match. And
Darby Allin, he might have to start adding him onto that list. He might be number six or something like that. Like where do you just throw him against anybody, man? Put a paper bag out there. You'll figure it out.
When you see Darby Allin in a television match, you're guaranteed to get a good time. And that's just a fucking fact.
Sucks, too, because, like, we know he's not going to last into his 50s. He's not. There's no way his body's going to be able to keep up. Hey, you know what I mean? Like,
he'll tell you right now. He's already in his 30s. No one said – they already said he wouldn't last until his 30s. That's what he'd tell you. He'd look you right in the face and say that.
And I would look him right in the face and be like, I believe you. But I also – I'm worried about you, man. Like, you know, like, I'm still worried about you, you know? I want him to be able to walk, you know, like – You know, he could be one of those athletes. So you ever hear about those athletes that, like, they don't do pain meds, they don't do reconstructive surgery and stuff like that. They just let injuries kind of heal themselves, but they do it in, like, a really naturalistic way. You know what I'm talking about? Like, they do still get, like, if he needs, like, surgery, like, otherwise he's not going to be able to walk type shit. Like, but, like, the type of, like, where you rehab injuries as opposed to fucking... You know what I'm talking about? Like, as opposed to, like, doing, like, you know, like, intense fucking therapies and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I could see him, like... He just goes home, puts himself in an ice bath for a few hours, lets his body, like, you know, the injuries, like, chill out, you know what I mean? And as long as it's not, like, a serious injury, which we know he's had those because he's been out for periods of time, you know what I mean? He obviously goes to the doctor. But, like, you know, if he's not, like, feeling super bad, you know what I mean? Like, he just kind of lets it sit, you know what I mean? And that could obviously be dangerous. I'm not going to advocate for that type of lifestyle. But to be fair, you know, I've seen athletes that don't treat injuries the same as others, and it actually works better for them, and they have a long life of, you know, never really having any serious long-term damage, you know? Do you think there's a possibility with that with him? Like, that he just knows how to rehab injuries for himself in a way that...
I think this motherfucker's invincible. He gets hit by a bus, and he wrestles the next week on Dynamite. The guy's an animal.
Was that literally the next week?
Yes.
That's insane.
Then he broke his
dude.
Foot and he showed up randomly like a fucking 6 weeks later. The guy's an animal.
The guy's a fucking absolute fucking fiend.
So then we get this fucking promo. We are Roosh and Don Callis. We're not happy about Roosh's loss. I love that part.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, that's good.
Love it. Booked a match with Preston Vance.
The guy who hasn't been featured on TV in like 2 years.
Prove
or something.
That Roosh will do whatever it takes to be the best. Callis just doesn't want a victory. He wants Vance hurt. And at first, I was like, what? I thought they were boys.
On paper, I was like, I get... No. That's what the whole point. He wants him to prove that he's ruthless, right? So... Which I don't know why you need him to prove that. That was like a whole ass thing they went through where they kidnapped him and the other members of the fucking, you know... La Facción and Gobernable and fucking took him to New Mexico and beat the shit out of them until they were hardcore. But whatever, you know, like...
So it's like, okay.
And Preston in the match, I'll just jump ahead. He didn't even play it up like he was like that disappointed. He even was kind of like, nah, dude, do it. You have to. Like, you know, like.
You're getting booked. I'm not, man. Let's do this.
You know what I mean? Like,
brother.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's probably because Preston's like, why the fuck am I even in the story?
Yeah, we get this little recap thing where Jeff's talking to Renee.
Give me a Preston Vance singles run.
And then Adam Page starts a fight with Jeff, which. I got a feeling we might know they're fucking all in plans. Wheeler Yuta and Rocky Romero in just not a bad match at all, I would say. It was pretty competitive. Really good combinations and exchanges like you would expect from these two guys. Right?
Way for you to like a Rocky Romero match is for it to be short. That's brutal.
I was just about to say, you see Rocky in it, you know, it's going to be, he's going to take the L. And
true.
Honestly, it's not going to impact any television. So you could skip the match if wanted. No, but it's fine. It was a fine match. A cattle mutilation for the victory. Renee interviews Willow. She expressed how upset she was with Stokely. Tomohiro interrupts. He's annoyed by Hathaway too. And this gives her an idea. Well, hello, I have an idea.
Shit.
Private Party defeats two jobbers. The main note here, Shivani called Wednesday's Dynamite card loaded.
He's not wrong.
Hey, Private Party won. Son of a bitch. Someone fucking shoot me. I'm happy.
Who the fuck died in the fucking back?
I love Private Party so much.
No, honestly, I'm surprised. They're so fucking... the only way I can describe them is their booking is like a pendulum or like a slingshot. It's like it whips back every now and then and they just get set back.
Starting this week, I made our pin tweet on Eat Sleep Elite. When Private Party win the AEW Tag Team Championships, we will all rejoice.
You're not wrong.
It'll be a day.
It'll be a good day.
We turn the page, hopefully, and the future of
the Adam Page?
The Adam Page.
The Hangman Page.
Also hyping up her match. Dustin Rhodes cuts a promo. He sees Sammy Guevara.
Sammy Guevara.
Sammy Guevara. We get this main event match where, no disrespect to anyone, it just wasn't for me. It was Saraya defeating Nyla Rose.
Saraya.
There were decent moments. Okay, I'll be honest. There were decent moments. But? Just wasn't great. So, I like them both. I just don't think something clicked in this. And it's not for a lack of time. They got some good time here. So, but yeah, Cameron held on to Rose's legs where he got the pinfall. Someone pointed out this was the Warrior Rude finish from WrestleMania 5. So, yeah, you know, don't get me wrong. I liked little things, you know. Right. Nyla hit a really cool choke slam. Harley Cameron's really good at distractions, right? Like, there's little things to like here, but the chicken shit and, I don't know. Saraya, sometimes you never really see her take certain bumps, so you always feel like your match is a little bit limited, and then maybe that's why the chicken shit happens so much. But, yeah, hey, they got the main event match. Good for them. And, you know,
Soon as one of us starts saying something like that, Saraya usually has a match where she, like, looks like 2008 Saraya again, you know what I mean? So, like, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, if I was in the live crowd and saw Saraya was on the card, I'd be fucking excited.
Yeah, because she can still deliver. Like, her match with Britt from, like, what was it, 2 years ago almost now or something? Like, either way, nothing to really complain about there. Just, you know, a little disappointing because you want to see more out of her.
Yeah, they got a main event match, and it, you know, I that could have turned a page on a potential feud, or you never know.
Haha, I see what you did there.
Yeah. Well, we've already covered a couple matches from Collision, and the opening match I almost picked as my favorite of the week, so take the lead.
Yeah, no, it was super fun. Like I mentioned earlier during my Ring of Honor stuff, it was during my Ring of Honor stuff, I believe, that Tony Nese is like genuinely super good and just underused. Which is a perfect example right here, because they put him and Josh Woods against Darby Allin and Hologram, which is not a match combination I would have given you off the top of my head that I wanted for Hologram. But first of all, for a tag partner, I actually kind of like Darby Allin and Hologram together for a couple of reasons. One, because Darby kind of works as a tag partner for just about anybody. Like his style kind of will just work with just about anybody. He just throws his body on the line, you know, for the team. And that pretty much everybody can get behind that. And Hologram, I will say, I'm not sure what it was for me here. I do think this is his weakest performance in ring so far. I don't think there was anything bad about it, but it did. There was a couple of moments in this match where I was like, okay, maybe it was when he was, maybe Josh Woods just wrestles a little stiffer than I realized, but there was a couple of moments when he was with Josh Woods that I was a little concerned. Do you know what I was talking about, Charlie?
A little bit, yeah. I mean,
I wasn't concerned, but I saw it and I was like, okay, you know, work it out. He figured it out, but like it, you could tell he was like, and you know, there was like one spot specifically. It was like a kick that he did to Josh Woods where like it was really badly timed and Josh kind of just took a bump off of it because he didn't really, I don't know if he knew what he was supposed to do. It was just, it might've been Josh Woods, honestly, but I don't really consider Josh Woods to be like having bad timing and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, so it could have just been nerves. And I honestly am probably just like hyper focusing on small things because of how good he has been. You know what I mean? Beyond that though, I thought everybody was really good in this match. It was really exciting. And I believe they got a little bit of time here.
He's still wrestling as Aramis on the Indies.
Okay, so in U.S. Indies too.
Event in Minnesota, so.
So then AEW may own the hologram gimmick, then that might have been the reason why they did it, so that he could still keep his Aramis gimmick.
I just looked out of curiosity to see if he wrestled. Hologram, this is a perfect example of the past couple weeks here. He's going to fit with anyone as a tag team. I would love it if it was Darby. That'd be fine with me. But he's going to fit with anyone as a tag partner. So maybe a mix of styles and we'll see where it goes.
I mean, fuck it. Throw Darby and Hologram against each other. Be like, hey, man, you did really good in our match, but I want to see what you can really do. That would be fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a Darby Allin television match. It'd be a great
100%,
time.
100%. I got to shout out the premier athletes here. Josh Woods has already been on the level for a while, but I feel like this tag match right here shows me that this team, in this version, which is, they've been trying this team for God knows how long now. You know what I mean? Like, it finally feels like it's arrived. They're almost respected now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They're actually like legit. So that's good. They probably won't win.
They gotta change that name to something more marketable. Because if you type in premier athletes right now, you're not gonna find anything about their name.
That's true. There is a ton of companies that are.
That's one of those little things that I always keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, there's just
for the sake of the talent too.
Yeah, they may just need to call them like something. Maybe they just. I mean, no offense to Mark Sterling, maybe they drop him and then Josh Woods just comes up with something. I'm sure he could come up with something. Just maybe like some kind of wrestling gimmick, you know, like, cause they all are pretty solid wrestlers. So, but, we talked about this earlier, the brilliant promo setup, or I guess I'd say segment setting up the Thunder Rosa versus Deonna Purrazza Texas bull rope match, that was narrated by Dustin Rhodes. And then we got probably the best video segment of the week after that match, which was an 80s style video and promotional package for the Outrunners. My God, was this a blast to watch.
This is how you get a talent over.
Yeah, and these guys can be the funny comedy tag team if you play them like this, because these kinds of gimmicks have worked in wrestling in the past. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, they were literally full-blown 80s beating up fucking nerds.
Yes, dude. They're like
smacking
literally
away the kids' fucking papers. I mean,
there is such an opportunity here. You know what I mean? Like, and if they don't run with it, they're fools. And it feels like they decided
just out of curiosity, I just typed in the Outrunners on Google. Everything's about them.
Yeah.
It's little things. You know, hey, it's little things. You type in the premier athletes, you're not going to see anything about our boys.
That's true. You're not wrong. You are not wrong. But yeah, so the Outrunners took on FTR. And as soon as Cash got in after they flexed, bro, he started fucking flexing. I was like, bro, Cash is about to abandon fucking Dax and join these guys.
He's in.
Bro, when he flexed, he was like, oh, look at dude. He's fucking yoked, dude. Holy shit. I mean, he looks, you know, yoked, but like, God damn.
Yeah, he hit up AJ Styles for sure.
Anyway, but that dude was looking fucking jacked. But yeah, I mean, this does, like, I'll just say it like I did in my notes, and this doesn't make me like more excited to see their matches, because like I still know what they're capable of doing, right? But this feels like a repackage that could work for these guys, and this was certainly one of the better matches I've seen them have. That's because they were with FTR, duh. But whatever, you know. Yeah. So, did you have anything you wanted to add about the match? Solid stuff. Just, you know, nothing spectacular or anything.
Solid stuff. What I'm about to say. And I think it's just a current vibe, maybe, for me. And this has to do with FTR and the Young Bucks. Neither of them are exciting me right now. And I don't know why.
Because they're not facing each other.
It could be. But they wrestled on Dynamite. I thought their match was fine. They wrestled here, and I thought it was fine. But for some reason, and I'll try and, you know, rack my brain this week before we get to the show next week.
I'll just tell you what it is. It's because they're not on Wembley, bro. It's why.
It could be. It's just something about it. I'm just not excited by FTR, and I've never felt like that. Just like I've never felt like that about the Young Bucks. And it just happens to be at the same time. Young Bucks, because his title reign's dog shit. But, yeah. No, I still love that they go out and wrestle guys like this, and they give them an actual match. They gave him a little bit of time.
You know, this straight up with that package, depending on how people took it. I don't know if like people talked about it after the show or not, but I don't know what the
I saw look. It a lot on Twitter, for what it's worth.
Yeah. That could have just made these guys. So FTR were smart.
They were given this opportunity,
and they gave them a good match after they did that segment. They probably knew exactly what was going on here, and they did exactly what they needed to. We cut to backstage where Kip Sabian is being asked about, like, yo, why'd you chuck somebody back over the rail? That was crazy. Like, I'm just trying to get some vengeance for myself, you know? And for my family. And then Nick Wayne walks up and tells him that his dad probably died a loser, and that basically challenges to a match, you know what I mean? And so that'll be a match we get, it looks like. But, excuse me, but yeah, some harsh words for Kip Sabian by Nick Wayne there. So Nick Wayne is becoming like his father. Like father, like son.
I like this. I like this promo.
God, if you'd have told me fucking when they debuted Nick Wayne after all the buildup of him being this, like, he's like the fucking, he's like fucking Marvel Jesus of the Indies, you know what I mean? Like, fucking, you know, like, literally, you know, that's kind of how he's talked about. Like, he's like the next big thing, you know what I mean? and he was going to be the ultimate babyface and all this. And I didn't really say that, but that's kind of how I picture it in my head when you're a young, up-and-coming, plucky star. That's how they treated Daniel for so long, how they treated, you know, Dante and various others. You know, I mean, you just kind of have to be a babyface when you're on the rise, you know? But they went a completely different direction with him, and man, it hasn't worked out so brilliantly. Sometimes people don't give, like, when people talk about that AEW doesn't do stories well, like, look at the fucking progression for the two guys, Nick Wayne and fucking Swerve Strickland, who were in a probably the one of the most, probably I would think that's got to be one of the most viewed things in AEW's history, right? That segment where he broke into the wrestling school and left them bloody.
I hope so. I really hope so.
If it's not, it should be. But it's certainly one of the most insane and over-the-top and crazy segments ever, right? In AEW's history. It's basically their moment. Remember that one that everyone talks about where the dude pulled out the gun and they cut away from it on Raw or whatever it was? Like, you know, it was like that, you know what I mean, for AEW. Except they didn't cut away from it. They showed him getting bloodied, you know what I mean? Like, they just, and then they cut away from it, you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, and then now where they're at now, one of them is world champion and the other is trios champion and in one of the more popular stables in the company right now as a really badass heel, you know what I mean? And the other one's as a giant babyface champion. The fucking journey those two characters have gone on in that time is insane. And that's just like something I have to highlight every now and then is just the level of storytelling that AEW does implement sometimes. You know what exemplifies that even further, Charlie? This is how you know I'm fucking cooking right now because I planned this perfectly. The phenomenal Maxwell Jacob Friedman versus Will Ospreay video package that featured a little segment where Kyle offered the idea that maybe MJF is the one guy that you should hit the Tiger Driver on because if anybody ever deserved it, it was him. God, this shit is so brilliant, Charlie. I mean, I don't know who's editing these video packages. Give them a raise. Give them a goddamn bonus. Give them a fucking blowjob. I don't know. Fucking like, you know, like, do everything for that person. Fuck, you know what I mean? Like, and only do it if they consent, of course, you know. But yeah, I mean, fuck. We kind of already talked a little bit about Roosh versus Preston Vance. Like, it didn't really work. You know, like, I don't know why. It just didn't quite, you know. Like, Roosh executed Order 66.
The great thing about Roosh is his violence always.
Yeah, the match was fine.
With the live crowd.
And Preston can sell. That's one of the things that being a part of this stable that he was with Roosh, actually, I think, you know, he figured out selling and timing and psychology. Not that he didn't already know that stuff, but it feels like he refined it in that time, you know, when he was getting a lot of reps. But, you know, he beat him up after the bell. Sure. You know, I mean, I can't complain about it. It wasn't anything wrong with it. It was just wasn't super exciting, you know? Jack Perry, we had the full version of the video here that wasn't cut into with the Taco Bell thing. No, actually, it was like, it felt like the same exact video. It was probably different. I talked about, you know, what are people willing to sacrifice? He's been saying this for like 3-4 months now. Just pick something new, Jack. I get it. You're willing to sacrifice what other people. You set yourself on fire for the company. We get it. What else are you willing to do? Like, Jesus. Sorry, I'm getting a little sick of him saying the same thing in every promo segment, you know? I get that the guy doesn't like promos, but you can write more than one, you know, like,
what is my sacrifice?
That one was different. See, that's a different promo. This is not the same, but it's kind of hitting the same point, you know? It's kind of like the whole fucking entire feud with the Elite right now is kind of just hitting the same points over and over again, really, you know? Well, it's kind of not even really continuing anymore, other than the fact that the Acclaimed were in one of the matches. It's so, okay, so that's going to be something that I think is actually, maybe that's our poll this week. Has this story of the Elite versus a Team AEW, has it been coherent enough because of the people shifting in and out? I know some of that was injury related, but obviously, like, you still have to play it with what you have. Does it still work as well as it would have if we hadn't done so much swapping around and, like, we have the Acclaimed that we already had the title shot before this stuff really kicked off, so it was kind of like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's a bit tough to answer, you know? Because it even kind of made stuff with Swerve a little bit weird, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, we can just say the overarching thing of, have you enjoyed this Elite versus AEW feud?
Yeah. Because it's probably wrapping up at Wembley, right? So,
ideally,
hopefully, God, can't be going into all. I mean, maybe they want to carry it all the way to All In. Actually, I don't know. Or sorry, All Out, I should say. Oh well, we'll move on. Where Strickland took on Tomohiro Ishii. I put in my notes at this point in the show that Ishii has been phenomenal, and hope he gets on the pay per view. And yeah, so. That was immediately followed up with the next segment where he got added to the pay-per-view on Zero Hour, teaming with Willow against Stokely and Stat. So, good stuff. That's right, Lexi. We've been here the entire time. It's MXM.
An all-timer fucking interview.
They called fucking Top Flight having some yes haircuts.
My God.
Bro, they did a fucking GTA 5 reference. And Top Flight, of course, were there, obviously. They're pissed off. And then I think they did they challenge them to a match? I don't even know. I think they did, yeah. And fucking then they said, you know what? We're out of here. And then exited through the floor the same way they came in.
Comedic timing through the fucking roof. This was awesome.
Bro, they got fucking Layla to laugh. That was fucking awesome. That's right, Lexi. We've been here the entire time. Dude, Aunt Sor is just fucking hilarious. Or was that fucking Mace that said that? I don't even know. It doesn't matter. The point is, they're both just fucking brilliant. That might be the best tag team acquisition, period. You know, other than FTR. Like, you know what I mean? Like, holy shit. You know, like, whew, fun stuff. Hikaru Shida took on Aaliyah Jones. It's real quick, but it was good stuff. I like seeing Shida on the shows. And this Aaliyah Jones is one that we mentioned. We were talking about this before the show. She's one that went from being on Ring of Honor, and she's gotten the nod. She's going to be featured on actual TV. Now, we don't know if that means she's just going to be like a regular women's division star. You'd think, based on that, you know, suggestion that she might be. But even if she's not, just the idea that she can be featured on the other shows now, it's kind of cool that there's almost like a level up to it, you know, like where if you do good work, they're going to feature you on the other shows. Bryan Danielson sat down and talked to Jim Ross, and I actually really did like this one as opposed to the Swerve one, which I didn't hate the Swerve one. I just didn't think it really did a lot. But I, you know, everything with Bryan in the lead up to this match has been phenomenal, and this was no exception. He was just talking about his career. And it's a shoot, man. This guy's talking about how brilliant his career has been and how unbelievable it's been, the ride that he's been on, how moments that he's had throughout his career just don't feel real because he's been the one in them and he didn't think he was ever going to get that, you know? It's just a beautiful, you know, encapsulation of what it's been like for this guy, you know? And if they didn't post this on the YouTube channel, they should. It's definitely worth it and it would get some views. Shida was then backstage and said she wants to have one more match against Britt Baker to settle the score because they're 2-2. So that's going to be a fucking massive blowout match. Maybe it should be for a championship. Hint, hint, you know? Anyway, maybe not this soon, but eventually, you know, maybe that should be a championship match, you know? Or maybe they should just have that match main event of fucking Dynamite or something, you know? I don't know. Kind of cool. But she also, this is when she called herself the ace, and she called out Mercedes for the title match here, which she ended up going on to get. And then that led us into the main event, which I already talked about being my favorite this week. Yeah. And how phenomenal that was. And that takes us to the end of Collision there, boys.
There was the passion you could feel in Hikaru Shida's promo.
Yeah, she wants, really. She's hungry. She's not just on a sabbatical from Japan right now. Not to be fucking, you know, coy about it, but it's, you know, how it feels sometimes. She's here to have a legit run right now. And I'm excited to see what she does. Because the last time she did this, she had one of the best women's feuds of the year. Against oh my goodness, the professor Deanna, or sorry, Serena Deeb, professor Deanna Praza.
Yeah, so AEW Dynamite Wednesday, August 14th. We got a lot announced already. Which, if you guys are listening to this before the show, get excited because it's gonna be pretty good tonight. We got the non-title match between Swerve and Wheeler Yuta. We got AEW Tag Team Champions the Young Bucks defending against the Acclaimed. We got TBS Champion Mercedes Moné defending against Hikaru Shida. Hangman Page versus Jay Lethal. Britt Baker appears. We got a Claudio Castagnoli and Zuchika Okada face-to-face. We got Orange Cassidy versus Roderick Strong versus Kyle O'Reilly. Winner earns the number one spot in the all-in casino gauntlet match.
Did you want the number one spot, though?
In this match, yes, because you can. That's the lowest amount of people that'll be in the match is you and the next
guy. Yeah, but like you're almost guaranteed to have at least two or three people come into the match before you get a pinfall
but
off, probably.
But if you're thinking about it as a shoot, you would want, because, you know, pick name out of a hat if Fuego does.
I mean, number 31 in the Royal Rumble usually wins. I mean, not usually, but sometimes wins, you know what I mean? Or, sorry, 31, 20, 28, I mean, 29, you know?
Yeah, you're going to be 31. Happy.
So, yeah, the person that comes out after the show ends is the one that wins.
We're going to film Bubba Raya May. We'll hear from Hook, and there's going to be a Bryan Danielson video package, so... Should be pretty cool.
Should be a good show there, bud.
And it's more than just a video package. It's about his entire career, and it's going to be played to Green Day, which I think is.
I wonder if it's going to be that song.
It is. It is.
Oh, it's going to be the fucking time of your life? Oh, yes. That's going to be fucking incredible, dude. And
it's going to be a very emotional.
I bet Tony Khan saw Deadpool and Wolverine.
He fucking did, that motherfucker. Shout out the Welsh Deadpool, Paul Mullen. Wrexham did lose today, but that's okay. It's high noon. We'll catch you guys later. Thanks so much for hanging around. We'll be back next week where all in predictions.